The Reverend Dr. Amos Brown is president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP and an effective civil rights organizer and leader for many decades. As the national outrage over Black lives still not mattering escalated, I was fortunate to be in private dialogue with Amos. He is a longtime friend. Our dialogues are always stimulating. In a recent conversation we had, his insights and perspectives were so valuable that I felt compelled to share that access with our listeners, and so I'm grateful to have Dr. Brown back on our show today. Amos, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for the opportunity of sharing with you and your audience again. There's an old saying that if you don't get your lessons, you will repeat your grade. And I think it's most unfortunate that in the human family, we have not learned our lessons. And we keep repeating this grade of destroying each other because of that Trinitarian evil of racism, materialism, and militarism.
Amos, we mark this 4th of July with enormous challenges facing our nation, but the fact that those challenges are too enormous to ignore, the failings in leadership, healthcare, racial equality also create a moment when true change looks possible. Do you think the American people are up to the challenge we face?
I'm not sure. I'm cautiously optimistic. Why? Because there have been these passages before in history when we thought that we were on our way to a change during the period of Reconstruction. But what happened? We got the backlash of the Ku Klux Klan, which was a terrorist group to suppress the Black vote and to destroy any semblances of Black self-determination and empowerment. And we went through a long period of separate but equal. And though we had the Civil Rights Movement, we had hope then, and the marches, demonstrations. But then we got this backlash again of George Wallace, later Richard Nixon and his law and order. And you have today Donald Trump consulting that playbook of law and order, always blaming the victims, never thinking deeply to gain an understanding of why there is violence in Chicago. There's a book that I would recommend that the audience would read, entitled 1919 by Miss Ewing. A great poetess, but she has some very profound preamble statements to every one of her poems explaining why there was this race riot in Chicago in 1919, right around the same time that there was a Spanish flu. And here we are in 2020 with the racial violence going on and Donald Trump trying to play racist politics, not trying, he's done it. And anytime he opens his mouth, he talks about law and order, talks about police being victims and they need to get tough. All of this is going on now. And I hope that there will be a miracle somewhere and change the trajectory of this country, because we're going down the same path that we went down 100 years ago and even times before that. Going back to the days of Aristotle in the 4th century B.C., before Jesus of Nazareth was born, he came up with the nonsense that Blacks, the Ethiopian, were inferior because their skin is dark, and that the only way we could become somebody, we would have to go up to Europe and become lighter. And he also said, and this is documented in his work, The Politics, that the Ethiopian would never be capable of self-governance. He would always have to have a white man, a white woman over him. Mm. So you see, this is in our DNA.
Yeah.
It is, as Jim Walzer said, our original sin, the sin of race, of dividing up the human family and never looking to see consistently that there's one human race. And we made a one blood, as the scripture says. And everybody needs blood. You need a blood transfusion. Your blood type is A and mine is A. And if you don't accept my blood because my skin is dark, you'll be a dead duck on arrival at the hospital. But that hasn't gotten into our conscience at all. It's still a problem around the world. Even over in Europe, in London, they are marching, saying Black Lives Matter. So that's my deep concern, that we have not learned our lesson, and we were repeating the grade again.
Amos, I know that you have spent your entire life fighting for racial and economic justice. We're seeing a lot of things going on around us now that give people, some people, hope. Is something happening now that you see that is different from the incremental change that we were able to bring about in past decades? Do you see enough difference this time to give you hope that you didn't have before?
Well, the only thing that's different, we have more people involved, different personalities, but the evil is still prevalent. We still have not gotten a hold of ourselves and acknowledged that racism is wrong. We have not had truth and reconciliation in America as they did in South Africa. And you cannot have reconciliation unless the oppressors come to grips with their guilt. And there's been too much of an attempt to explain away, to rationalize what's going on. And many are in a state of denial. So that I just will not feel happy or content until we get rid of these glaring economic disparities in the Black community, mm-hmm. until we get rid of this blatant gentrification that destroys Black cultural enclaves, until we get rid of low achievement in school systems. For example, in Chicago, last year, over 50 schools were closed down. Now, mind you, we're closing down inner city schools at a time when we are spending billions of dollars on the military. And you have this president who wanted to have a big parade exhibiting the weaponry of this country. He's not about going to the table and negotiating and being a part of a world community. He and the religious right have been espousing nationalism. You know, my nation over against your nation, and this dichotomous thing of them against us, that is ruinous to the human family. And we need to master that little pronoun, we. But this man has been about my, I. And he is guilty of the sin of Adam, like many of us are, of playing the blame game instead of being held accountable for one's actions. You know the old story where Adam blamed Eve and Eve blamed the snake? The poor snake didn't have nobody to blame. We must stop the blame game and assume responsibility for what happens in these communities where police are going around beating up on Black people as they always have done when they had the slave catchers back during the days that we resisted. That's when the police department really had its genesis in this nation.
Amos, when I think about you and our conversations, I know your mentors and your friends were Martin Luther King Jr., Medgar Evers, Benjamin Mays. I love hearing you talk about these people. What do you think they would say, seeing the state of our nation and activism today?
They would all say, how long, oh Lord, how long? Mm. How long will it take America to realize that democratic republics don't last unless there is justice, equality of opportunity, civility, and respect for the worth and the dignity of all human beings. Regardless of how different they might be, they should be respected. From these giants whom you name, they all model dignity, elegance, humility, and they have the nerve to speak the truth to power centers without being bombastic, without being mean-spirited. They were human, yes, but they stood above what we are experiencing today. The leadership in this nation is in trouble, and they were quintessential examples of quality leadership.
Yeah.
And that's why even here in California, where I reside, the Proposition 8 was bannered around. Though I came from Mississippi, where there was conservatism around me, a literal interpretation of the Bible, but thank God for the churches that I was reared in. They were all social justice churches. Farris Street, College Hill, Pearl Street AME Church. Just a handful, but they made great efforts to follow Jesus and not imperialistic, oppressive religiosity. And I thank God for that tradition that I met before I went to Morehouse. And my civil rights activism was advanced, sitting in with Dr. King and hanging around Samuel Woodrow Williams, who was pastor of the oldest Black Baptist church in Atlanta, and president of the Atlanta branch of NAACP. So we need to have this generation of activists to read the lives of these great giants who dealt with this evil of race in a sophisticated, loving, yet forthright manner. And that's what it's going to take. Because Dr. King was right. If we don't learn how to live together as brothers and sisters, we're all going to perish as fools.
Yeah. Amos, my background is not the same as you. I didn't have the teaching that you had. And so I think back to the civil rights era of the 1960s and painfully recall how silent most majority white churches in this country were on the question of racism. Plenty of them even spoke out in support of segregation. So perhaps it shouldn't be surprising that we see some of the same things happening today. I know you have strong feelings about this, and I want you to comment on it, because I think I see some white evangelical leaders who seem to be actively undermining the fight for racial equality in this country now.
Again, history is repeating itself. Well, back when the times that the Civil War was coming, what happened? It was the church house that defended slavery. Even Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, was founded on the sale. Even you had the Methodist preacher who had that revitalization of the Ku Klux Klan in 1915, Simmons, at Stone Mountain outside of Atlanta. So we would maybe been further down the road toward a better day if the faith community had not buttressed and supported racism. Even Jerry Falwell supported racism and segregation. Liberty College was started as one of those Christian schools. Those Christian academies back in the late 50s and 60s to get around the Supreme Court decision. And even today, you have Moeller, president of Southern Seminary, candidate for the presidency of Southern Baptist Convention, supporting Donald Trump all the way. Now, I hate to invoke these names, but there are times when in the prophetic tradition, you have Franklin Graham, who supports this man. It was in 1952, the very year that Brother Franklin was born, that his father, in my hometown of Jackson, Mississippi, to go to the end of pulling down ropes
at the first segregated crusade in the state of Mississippi. Hugh White, the governor, had insisted that if Billy Graham came there, he would have to speak to a segregated audience. But I, as an 11-year-old child, saw this man leave the podium at that stadium of Bailey Junior High and pull down those ropes, go back up to the podium at the cross. There should be no segregation. But his son, Franklin, has taken the ropes to make, so to speak, a social and spiritual noose in these times. And I have talked with him personally about his honoring his father's legacy of pulling down the ropes and his working to complete the unfinished agenda of ridding this nation of racism and division. So my prayer, my hope is that we go to the book and read it. It says that judgment begins in the house of the Lord. And the religious folk, the so-called Bible Belt, would come together and reason, as I said, talk to each other, listen to each other, hear each other. Then maybe we can create a better image of America around the world. And we indeed shall be worthy of being emulated as one nation under God with liberty and justice for all.
The Reverend Dr. Amos C. Brown is an African-American pastor and civil rights activist. He's the president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP. He has been the pastor of the Third Baptist Church of San Francisco since 1976. Amos, thank you for doing your part in bringing us toward a more perfect union. I cherish you as a friend. I thank you for every time you're being willing to come on State of Belief Radio and give all of us insights that we would not have without you. Thank you so much.
And I congratulate you for maintaining the forum in which we can have these kinds of informed, spiritual, and practical conversations around what we must do.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. It's Independence Day weekend in America. Weary and worried. 244 years old today and still a newborn. Please let me wish you patriotism. The clarity of vision that the sacred freedom to take a knee during the national anthem means nothing when the national anthem's words are no longer heard by those who sing it. That burning a flag will never disrespect it as much as forgetting the sacrifices made by so many to preserve the fundamental freedoms its stars and stripes represent. That tearing down misguided post-Reconstruction statues of traitorous, seditious slave owners is nothing compared to the dismantling piece by piece of the values represented by the Statue of Liberty. And give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Again, yearning to breathe free. In 2020, BLM George Floyd, America, hear that anew. And recall the next line of the Emma Lazarus poem, The New Colossus Cast Upon the Statue of Liberty, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. My fellow Americans, we have forgotten. And with that all-encompassing we, I mean all of us together. And so it doesn't matter if 54% or the voters in the blue states or my particular Facebook friends have not forgotten. As a nation, a melting pot, an e pluribus unum, we have forgotten that the Statue of Liberty stood tall for all to see, and the Golden Door words of Emma Lazarus, the Jewish poet, were available for all to read. And still, America turned away scores of desperate Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi Europe a scant few decades ago. We have such profound failings in our bloodline, and yet have risen to atone and to include and to lift up time and again. It's not inevitable that we will manage to do it once more. It's perhaps not even likely, but it is indeed truly still possible. Free Speech brings you State of Belief every week, but your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and be part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.